Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, and welcome to our post-trade deadline edition of Number One Baseball's Off the Bat. I'm Jana, and joined as always by my co-host Eric.
Hey guys, welcome. Another exciting trade deadline in the books.
Yeah, I'd say so. When we last left you guys in the midst of the deadline, Carlos Gomez was a Met. And now we're back, and he's a Houston Astro. So some things have changed.
things have changed or haven't happened. It's been a ride.
Yeah, Cole Hamels has a new team, David Price, Yoenis Cespedes. Everybody in a Dodgers uniform wasn't there a few days ago. It's a whole new world out there. So we've got a lot to go through, obviously. But I think probably the place to start is Carlos Gomez, because as we were going off the air last time, it was just coming out, the deal was just about done, he was going to be a Met, they were making graphics with his face on it with a Mets hat, things were getting crazy. But in the meantime, a few hours later, the deal fell apart, that no one's saying exactly who, but it looks like it was a medical thing with Carlos Gomez's hip, actually, believe it or not. Not Zach Wheeler, the guy coming off Tommy John surgery who was in the trade, but it was actually the healthy guy. So the deal falls apart, and weirdly enough, the biggest story that comes out of that is probably Wilmer Flores, but we'll get to him in a minute. And then Carlos Gomez then turns around the next day and becomes a member of the Houston Astros. So, I'm not sure what the bigger story is the fact that the Astros got Gomez, and we'll talk about the rest of their pieces in a minute, or the roller coaster that the Mets players went on, both Wilmer Flores, who was crying on the field after the game, all over the place, a lot of tears. And even Zach Wheeler did an interview talking about how he thought he was traded a couple of different times. And it just ended up being a really weird situation.
Yeah, I agree. I like you said, I mean, we thought when we were wrapping up the show last week that, you know, Carlos Gomez was in fact headed for the Mets. You know, I think we even talked about it a little bit. I think it's interesting and kind of funny that Carlos Gomez apparently or evidently was the one who had the medical issue, so to speak, and not, like you said, the guy coming off Tommy John surgery, currently on the DL. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Clearly, I guess it wasn't that big of a concern. I'm not sure if there's some like underlying thing that happened there or what. You know, obviously the Astros were able to go in and scoop him up without too much of an issue. So, you know, it kind of all worked out there, and we'll talk about the Mets kind of counter move to that because they clearly didn't sit on their hands either in a little bit. But from a trade standpoint, I do like the trade for the Astros. I don't think they gave up too much. I think they have a very deep farm system. You know, the players they did give up to pick up Gomez, I think was a nice lift. He really does solidify that outfield. Jake Marisnyk was their center fielder, kind of, you know, for the most part for the season. Obviously, former Marlins prospect that went over in the Jared Cozart deal. But, you know, I like it. I think it shores them up. I think that it makes the outfield and their bench a little bit deeper because Marisnyk, you know, kind of a borderline a starting outfielder. I think he's going to do well as a pinch runner, as a defensive replacement. He's very well known and well regarded for his defense. So I'd like to trade a lot for the Astros. I definitely think, you know, they're a winner in this deal. You know, as are the Brewers, I think it doesn't make sense to hold on to Carlos Gomez. You know, they're obviously not going anywhere anytime soon. So I like to trade from both standpoints, but I like it more from the Astros.
Yeah, I think so. While we are talking about the Mets, let's real quick talk about Wilmer Flores, who was not on pretty much anyone's radar outside of Citi Field, becomes almost this media darling in the last week after this Carlos Gomez deal falls apart, because it was a the Mets were playing in a nationally televised game as this is happening. They were on ESPN that night, and yeah, you know, the commentators keep talking about, like, that's so weird, they haven't taken Flores out of this game, and it's the eighth inning before they finally take him out. And he's fine. People are yelling to him from the stands that he's traded and this and that, and, like, it's a whole thing. And then afterwards, he's crying in his press conference, and then he's still a Met, and now it's almost lit a fire under him, and he's essentially become, you know, a piece they traded for. He's become this completely different player and so productive in this. I mean, he's winning them games, and he's hitting RBIs like there's no tomorrow. And it just, essentially overnight, he became a face of this team. It's crazy.
I have mixed emotions on this. I want to go as far as to call him, like, a baby, but I understand there's obviously a human element to baseball. You know, I think that this does serve as a reminder that this isn't a video game. These are real players, real families, you know, real lives that are being traded. In some cases, you know, across the country, you know, Milwaukee to New York, you know, was the rumor, obviously. You know, it's still a big leap, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. But on the same token, I mean, he is a professional ball player. I think he has to understand that, like, this is part of the game. I mean, you know what I mean? I don't, like I said, I have mixed emotions on this. You know, the fact that he's getting choked up, it's almost like you have to kind of take it like a, I don't want to say take it like a man, but, you know, take it and grin and bear it if you have to. You know, this is part of the game. This is what you signed up for. This is about being in the big league. You know, I guess be honored in the fact that you're a significant piece of a fairly major transaction happening at the trade deadline. You're worth being traded for. The Brewers wanted you. So take a little pride in that. And I think that, you know, that's the kind of flip side to it. You know, I hope that this doesn't become a whole, you know, Wilmer Flores thing. You know, I think he's barely hanging on aside from his offensive production, you know, to his starting gig in the lineup, and actually hasn't really been starting lately. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not a big Wilmer Flores fan, so it's hard for me to get too much on board with, you know, all the emotions. But like I said, there's definitely two sides to this point.
Yeah, it's weird. But the Mets did make some other news. They did, instead of getting Carlos Gomez, they ended up with Yoenis Cespedes with about 12, 13 minutes left before the deadline. It kind of pulled a rabbit out of their hat, and it just, I didn't expect it to happen personally. I still am not completely on board with the Tigers deciding that they were going to trade Price and Cespedes when they're only three games out of the wild card. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Cespedes going to the Mets, I don't know if it's going to be enough. Right now they're in first place, but the Nationals are getting healthy. Once they figure out their internal issues, I think they're going to come at the Mets, and it's going to be maybe not the fairest fight in the world. I just don't think the Mets have the offense as good as their pitching is. Cespedes doesn't fix the fact that 1-9, he can't hit in every position. There's just not a lot of production there. Lucas Duda finally woke up, looks like a player, but they still have a lot of holes in that lineup, and I don't know if this is enough to fix it for them to get in the playoffs or even really do more than a wild card playoff game.
I think the Mets, the Mets had to do something. I think, especially after the Gomez deal fell apart, really because of, you know, their own doing. I think they had a riot on their hands from their fan base. But this trade is actually really interesting because the Mets basically have no shot in re-signing Cespedes unless it happens before the completion of the season.
When he got traded, they asked him, hey, what do you know about the Mets? And he was like, that they're in the National League. Like, that was the extent of his knowledge. That's not a great start.
That, and he also has a clause in his contract, which, if he was traded, automatically requires the team that has acquired him to release him upon the completion of the season. So when that happens, Yeah, but the catch to the Mets is that he can't be re-signed until the beginning of the following season, because you're ineligible to re-sign the same player that you released during the off-season, during that same off-season, so you can't re-sign them. So it actually becomes very logistically challenging that, and we'll see if it bites the Mets, because they're basically seeing if they possibly could a rental. I mean, this is a guy who's really, I mean, unless, like I said, they sign him before the completion of the season, which I don't hear any rumors of, you know, contract extension. And how often do you see that happen in September? Extremely rarely. So I just, it's risky. I think they needed something. They needed a punch in their lineup. They gave up a pretty well-regarded prospect for him. You know, they have the pitching to do that. So I don't necessarily know if that it's a bad thing, but they did pay a C price for a very, very true rental in every sense of the word. Like you said, I don't think it's enough to get them into the postseason. Their pitching is phenomenal. I think we're going to be seeing how they handle the pitching, because it's a very, very young staff. Are they going to have inning limits coming up? So lots of questions to be asked, and certainly not many answers yet, but it's going to be interesting to kind of see how the Mets unfold, if they unravel, and kind of how their staff is managed, and if they can score enough runs, because I definitely agree with you also with the Nationals. I think they do have a better lineup when healthy, which is the big asterisk in front of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with you there. And, I mean, they've got a couple of months to try to get him to buy in, and it looks like David Wright's taking batting practice now. He may be coming back soon. I just don't think it's going to be enough. I really don't. So, almost too little too late for me. But, hey, Mets fans, you got your wish. You got a big-name guy to go along with your big-name rotation. And I know my best friend's a huge Mets fan. He's very excited about this. I just don't want to be the one that rains on your parade. Let's talk about, now that we know where Carlos Gomez did not go, we know that he did end up with the Astros, he and Mike Fiers, which I think isn't getting enough props. That could be a really nice under-the-radar move, getting Fiers as well, and the Astros weren't done there. They also got Scott Kazmir, and their pitching staff's, you know, shaping up pretty nicely. I know Scott Kazmir doesn't really have sexy numbers, being 5-5 and a 2.38 ERA, but, I mean, people kind of forget how good he was for a period of time. And he's a guy who has some veteran experience. He can kind of be a leader here. I think that the Astros are a contender for one of the winners of the trade deadline. I don't think they are far and away the winner, but I think they're up there in the conversation.
I agree, and I think we talked about the Scott Kazmir deal a little bit in the last show, but I like that deal a lot. Scott Kazmir came at a fairly inexpensive price. You know, he's not, for lack of a pun, a David Price. He's not Johnny Cueto. He's not one of the big names on the market who was going to require a lot of prospects or high-level prospects to go and get. So I did like the trade for the Astros to get Scott Kazmir. Mike Fiers, I like that trade as well. He was, I don't want to call him a throw-in, because I don't think he's a throw-in by any stretch of the imagination, but like you said, a very under-the-radar acquisition that, you know, all of a sudden, now the Astros added two pretty big pieces to their rotation, which is arguably one of their biggest, you know, pitfalls for the season. So I really like what the Astros did during this this trade deadline. I think they're one of my winners for sure. And Scott Kazmir is a guy who's proven he could pitch in the American League. So I think that's going to be really important come down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I thought the Astros, they were having a good year. Awesome. Let's get excited and build on this for next year. But, you know, they're all in. I like it. It's aggressive, but hell, I'll get on board. I'll watch this happen. I mean, your number one pitcher, your ace of your staff, was the starter for the All-Star game, and you've got a couple of good pieces around him, and you were able to get some of these guys. I just, how can you not? I understand what they're doing, and the moves really aren't bad. They didn't have to get, they gave up some stuff, but they didn't sell the farm for a chance at a World Series this year. They were kind of cautiously all in, if you can be that way.
Yeah, I think that's what's going
to be. That goes.
I think, like you said, I think they're going to be good for a while, too. They didn't give up a ton to get these guys. But I think they're the right pieces. I think they're strategic pieces. And I think it's going to pay off for them. We'll see if they can hold off the Angels and possibly even surging Rangers, as the year progresses.
Yeah. We've got a couple of other big names moving. We talked about Cespedes. We'll get to David Price in a minute and the Blue Jays because that's a whole other conversation. But let's talk about Cole Hamels for a minute. On our last show, we were talking about how there were a couple of teams in the mix. It looked like the Dodgers were probably going to be out based on what we'd been hearing about the potential deal with the Marlins, which we'll get to that in a minute. That took on a whole other life after we went off the air. But Cole Hamels did move. Ruben Amaro Jr. finally pulled the trigger, and he is officially a Texas Ranger. And that mostly was of his doing. He has so many clauses and so much pull in his contract that he could have vetoed pretty much anything. He gave the Phillies a list of places he would go. There was one team that matched with what was on the table, and that was the Texas Rangers. So he's down there. I don't think this is a move for them to get to the playoffs this year, because that's not entirely realistic. But the fact that they control him for several more years, this is a next year, the year after play more than anything else, I think. How'd you feel about this?
I like this trade a lot. I was surprised that Ruben Amaro actually made a trade. Oh my gosh.
We talked about it. We both half expected him to still be a Philly come this time.
Yeah, and I like the trade for both sides. I think the Phillies actually got good quantity and quality of prospects, a pretty good haul from the Rangers. The Rangers were able to hold on to their best prospect, Joey Gallo in particular, who I know the Phillies, I'm sure, were pulling for. So I think it's a win-win. Texas, I think the biggest haul has been the rotation, almost for as long as I can remember. I mean, you Darvish.
I mean, even when back when they were going to the World Series year in and year out,
yeah,
that's because they had guys they turned from relievers into starters. You look at guys like C.J. Wilson, Neftali Feliz. They never had a core pitching staff that I think they were comfortable with or really anyone was truly afraid of, because it was always so fluid. There was guys moving back and forth. They were a long man. They were a starter. They were a reliever. It was kind of like a Chinese fire drill in that pitching staff. It just never felt settled, and it still hasn't. And now they've gone on the decline. But you look at now, you've got some big names back. You've got Hamels on the rotation. You've got Josh Hamilton, when he's healthy, he's back around. And you've got a lot of good young guys still, even after making this trade and trading away prospects. You still have a lot of young guys that are really talented coming up or about to come up. They're hanging out in double and triple A, just waiting for a chance. And you kind of start to think 2 years from now, this could be another contending team.
I think so. I think from the Rangers standpoint, they didn't go out and get somebody like David Price or Prado, who's going to be a rental. They got Hamels, who's real appeal was the fact that he does have a few more years of control on him. Expensive control, but we'll see what pitchers are going for these days, and I don't think it's outrageous, especially for the quality of pitcher that he is. And like you said, I think next season, I would be surprised if they do enough this season, but I think next season is really where we're going to see the rotation come together. Everybody's going to get healthy, hopefully for the Rangers' sake, and they'll hopefully be able to kind of pull it off and possibly pick up one or two pieces in the off season to really put the pedal to the metal, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, let's now visit this Dodgers, Marlins, and Braves deal that essentially everybody in the world was involved in. I mean, this then spawned another trade from there. So it really came down to being like a 4-team deal when you factor in the Pirates. But when we last talked, Michael Morse and Matt Latos were going to go to the Dodgers. They were finalizing paperwork. A third team was rumored to be involved, but this thing had been going on all day and still wasn't done. So turns out the third team was the Braves. The Dodgers end up getting Matt Latos from Miami, as well as Michael Morse and Bronson Arroyo, Alex Wood, Jim Johnson, Luis Avalon from the Braves. Then they go and they flip Michael Morse to the Padres for Jose Tabata. Miami gets three minor leaguers from the Dodgers. They send a draft pick to Atlanta. Atlanta picks up a couple of prospects. They also got Hector Oliveira, who we were talking about last show, and some minor league pitchers. So this whole thing took forever to get done, but once it did get done, the Dodgers came out basically in one trade, took care of every need they had. They needed a lefty and a righty in their bullpen. They needed another starter or two. They took care of everything. I was very impressed with how they were able to make this work. The Dodgers, for as many big deals as they were rumored to be in on, and names like Price and Hamels and everybody under the sun, for the amount that they brought in, they didn't give up a ton.
Yeah, they gave up, and this is something we talked about a little bit in previous shows, is this a trend that we're going to start to see? You know, the Dodgers basically flexed their financial muscles in this trade. basically disposing of like $11 million owed to Michael Morse. And then Matt Latos as well was owed a pretty nice chunk of change. I think he signed for $10 million on a year, so whatever the prorated version of that is. So all in all, the Dodgers probably took on almost $20 million in salary. Just for the sake of not having to give up.
Doesn't even seem to matter to them at all.
Not at all.
They're playing with
monopoly
money and everybody else is playing with real money.
They essentially, bought the Marlins compensation pick. I mean, that's essentially, and a starting pitcher. That's basically what they did. They really didn't give up. The Marlins didn't really get too many. They got three prospects in return, but none of them are considered high quality. I think only one cracks the Marlins top 30, so nothing really too major. I think the more significant portion of this trade, like you alluded to, is on the back end where, you know, they sent Michael Morse, who was immediately designated for assignment, and then it traded after that to the Pirates. Oliveira going to the Braves, I think is huge. You know, I think a lot of maneuvering kind of happened on the back end. The Braves also got the compensation pick, which ultimately came from the Marlins. So I think it was a win-win. Oliveira really didn't have much of a spot for or a home in the Dodgers organization. He's going to be blocked pretty much at every position in the infield.
Yeah,
so
there was no way he was going to see playing time for at least a couple of years. And it's kind of silly to have him if you can't use him.
Exactly. Now he's going to come up probably next year and be the tandem in the middle with Simmons. So it's a great trade for almost everybody involved. You look at it from the Marlins' perspective, they dumped a lot of salary, which, you know, Michael Morse was owed a lot of money to do not much of anything. So I think it's a good trade from all three angles. But I think out of these two, I think the Dodgers and the Braves, you know, probably the Dodgers for the immediate term are the winners.
Yeah, I think so. That deal took like a day and a half to get done. And then once we finally found out what was in it, it made a lot more sense because there was about 300 moving pieces. So just really strange. But I think the Dodgers did as well as they could out of that. And then, obviously the Marlins kind of just doing what they do every trade deadline.
Yep.
Not making a lot of sense. But it's all good. we can work with that. And let's talk about the team who I think we kind of have to probably name the winner of the trade deadline, and that is the Toronto Blue Jays. We talked last show about the Troy Tulowitzki, Jose Reyes flip and all the money and the prospects that went into that. But then the Blue Jays were not done there, because all of a sudden, sure, you go up, I think it was a 1.6 in WAR at the shortstop position, but now if you're gonna do this, you got to go all in. So let's get crazy and keep trading for people. They then went and acquired David Price. And so that obviously puts them on another level. That's adding a true ace to your pitching staff, which, while, you know, Mark Burley and Drew Hutchinson and Marco Estrada and all those guys, R.A. Dickey, Marcus Stroman, were doing the job, Mark Burley's great, but he pitches to contact now. He's not lights out, shutting people down. He's not throwing no-hitters. It's been about 10 years. But David Price, on the other hand, is going to come in, and, he's kind of their first true number one pitcher since Roy Halladay. Just the fact that you haven't really had an ace since 2009, not a great look for your club. So this is, even though he's a rental, obviously they're going big. They're trying to make this a destination for people, and I think that's kind of a good way to go about it. They also picked up Ben Revere from the Phillies, who's, you know, he's solid. He's nothing spectacular, but he's going to get the job done. And then LaTroy Hawkins and Mike Lowe. So they're kind of bolstering their bullpen as well, which is a little suspect at times. They gave up a lot. They gave up prospects. They gave up quality players, especially to the Rockies. But I think this could work. I don't know if I'm totally sold on it yet. I want to give it a little bit of time, but Josh Donaldson's on fire. Tulowitzki's been healthy for the week that he's there, and he's hitting home runs, so that in itself is nice. I think this could work. Obviously, the rest of the AL kind of having a down, the AL East at least kind of having a down year. What do you think?
I think I have the same hesitation you do. I think that it could work.
Optimistic.
Yeah, it should work, and I hope it does work. I do want to see the Blue Jays succeed. It's been so long, so I hope it works out. But you're right. I wonder if it's, I don't say too little, too late, because these are huge moves that they made. But I just wonder if it's coming too late. They're still a 500 team. Granted, the division is within reach. I'm pretty sure the wild card is within reach. So. They're out of a playoff spot.
I think they're a game out of the wild card, five or six behind the Yankees in the East, which that's not insurmountable by any stretch of the imagination. It's not the easiest thing in the world, but it can be done. I mean, we saw it
especially
the Mets back in 07, but it can be done. It's just they got that's a lot of moving parts all coming together all at once, learning how to be a team.
Yeah, I like it. I think, like I said, I hope it helps them. I wonder if they do need another pitcher in their starting rotation. I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, you never know what happens over the waiver trade deadline, which is August. But I'm cautiously optimistic as well. I think my hunch wants to tell me, and my gut tells me that it's too late in the season. And they should have made a push earlier. Granted, you don't know if David Price is going to be available earlier in the season. It wasn't until basically the day before the trade deadline the Tigers decided that they were going to be sellers. Tulowitzki, I think they could have gotten in the offseason, though, if that was the direction they wanted to take. But who knows, again, was Tulowitzki available very late in the game as well? So if that's the case, though, I have to give a lot of credit to the Blue Jays, because they didn't rush and acquire kind of some patchwork players who weren't going to be the full and high-level commitment that they need, or that high-grade A player like a David Price and like Troy Tulowitzki. So without knowing the full scope of who's available and when, take it for what it is on the surface, I think they did a good job. They just have to click very quickly to make up some ground. But with the two wild card spots, it definitely keeps teams in it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the Blue Jays are definitely, either the winner or very close to it. We talked last week about really liking what the Angels and the Royals had done. I'm still very into what the Royals did. The Dodgers, I mean, it looks good on paper. I don't know how it's going to translate. And then, of course, the Astros, they're kind of quietly making a push. They're still in it, as crazy as that sounds. I think those are probably the biggest movers and shakers of the trade deadline. If I had to pick a loser, maybe the Mets, they need to do more. The Orioles should have done something. And I just don't think the Tigers should have sold the farm. I get you're looking towards the future. Dave Dombrowski's gone now, but they were in it, and Justin Verlander's returning to form. I don't know if I would have pushed the self-destruct button just yet. What about you? What are your feelings from the trade deadline? Now that we're a few days removed from it, we can think logically again.
I think my winner is actually the Astros. I do really like what they did. I think they went out and got somebody who's more than a rental, Zobrist rental, Cespedes rental, Price rental, Cueto rental, Kazner, I believe, is a rental. So a lot of rentals being moved, but the Astros did actually go out and get a more of a long-term piece. I'm actually going to credit the Rangers with a win too, maybe not for this season, but I think
long-term
down the line, I think they're a long-term win. I see two real losers in the trade deadline. I think one, the Padres. They didn't do anything.
Everybody was available. That's a great point. I mean, we were talking about how they almost diluted their own chances by putting everyone on the market all at once, and nothing happened. I mean, they couldn't do anything, and it's disappointing.
Exactly, and I think the other loser in my mind is the Orioles. I think they needed to do something when everybody else in your division is. They don't do anything. They stand pat. And I think actually those two teams would have made great trade partners. I just think that the Orioles are now going to start feeling a lack of depth in their minor league system. They don't have a lot of pitching to offer. Pitching is what's going to make these trades happen. I think Justin Upton was a natural fit for the Orioles, but the pitching or the prospects just aren't there for the Orioles to swing those trades. I think the Orioles might be, the light might be closing up pretty quickly for them. And their chance of making a playoff run.
We talked a little bit about this last show. Like, I think this was probably their year. They have a lot of guys in the last year of their deal, and you can't bring them all back. I mean, I think they missed a big opportunity for the same reason that the Blue Jays went so hard at the trade deadline. The fact that you look at your two powerhouses, the Red Sox are having just an atrocious year, and the Yankees, for the fact that they're still up there, it's nothing that feels like you can't take them down. And they just put half their team on the DL yesterday, it seemed like. I mean, they trade for Dustin Ackley, and he's on the DL 2 days later. Like, clearly they're not having the best luck. I don't know why you wouldn't go for it, especially this year, especially with so many guys in their walkaway year and with your division kind of on the downswing. This was your chance, and you did nothing. That makes sense.
I mean, they're going to lose Chris Davis in all likelihood. I believe Matt Weir's contract is up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are two huge pieces out of the lineup with really no viable replacement in the offseason. So, unless they're going to start spending some money on what's going to be a very big starting pitching pool for free agents this offseason, I think the Orioles' light is starting to burn out pretty quick. I think they missed an opportunity. They're right there with the Blue Jays in the standings. I think the Blue Jays have a better team. But, I mean, I think the two of them were trading for second and third place in that division around the trade deadline. There's really no excuse that they didn't make a deal. Like I said, Justin Upton, I think, would have been a great fit. But I think the lack of prospects in their system is going to start hurting them.
Yeah, and, I mean, if you're the Orioles, trade your pitching prospects if that's what you need to do to get things done this year, because there's about 100 quality pitchers that are going to hit free agency in this offseason. So if you're going to spend money because you know you're not bringing back this whole team, go get it then. Get yourself somebody you can control. Get yourself an outfielder, a bat, something that you can control now. Don't go after a Cole Hamels and sell the farm for that. But I just... Especially if you make such a good point with the Padres, that was a team that was looking to unload. You were going to get people at a discount. Sure, you might have to eat some of that salary, but you absolutely could have had them eat some of it as well. There's no reason that you couldn't have gotten something done. None.
Yeah, I think they could have gotten, you know, like a Tyson Ross or, you know, Ian Kennedy, a Justin Upton for a fairly good price, you know, especially if they're willing to take on the contract. I think they, you know, the Orioles are no slouch of a, you know, a team when it comes to the payroll. They have a decent payroll. So I think they could have afforded to absorb some of the contracts to pick up a few places. You know, instead of maybe giving away some of their higher-level prospects. So, I think the Orioles and the Padres are the clear losers in my mind this trade deadline.
I can totally get on board with that. And we definitely want to hear from you guys all over social media. We want to hear who are your winners, who are your losers, what are you hoping your team's going to do with this August waiver deadline, which we'll talk about next week. There are definitely some big names being thrown around. Reyes, Utley, all kinds of guys being thrown out there for the waiver deals. So we'll be back next week with that. In the meantime, Eric's going to tell you where to find us all over social media, and we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can use the hashtag OffTheBat, or follow us at #1Baseball's AmericValue1. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/number1baseball. That's all spelled out. And recently on the Instagram machine, you can follow us using hashtag #OffTheBat, #1Baseball. We're pretty much checking on the feed, so hit us up and we'll respond.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of the week, guys, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one, everybody. Thanks for listening.